It is far. It is gone to win the game.
The Mets are on their way back.
World champions for the 27th time.
Home plate for all things Major League Baseball. This is the Nosebleeds Podcast on WFUV Sports.
Welcome back to another edition of the Nosebleeds Podcast, where we talk everything baseball when it comes to Yankees, Mets, and around the MLB. It's been a crazy week as we enter the first week of September, coming down to the end of the season. I have two wonderful hosts with me, Lauren Mondaruli and Bradley Byrne. First, before we get into baseball talk, how you guys are doing? Semester's beginning, baseball is ending. It's kind of like that time of the year.
You know, I'm doing pretty good. You know, the semester's gotten a nice start to it. As a Yankees fan, you know, we'll get into it. I'm very upset, but I am okay with how the Yankees are playing out right now, other than, you know, their closer situation. We'll get into that. Looking across, you know, onto Queens, I think the Mets are in a really interesting spot right now, but overall, I'm doing really good and excited to get into it with you guys.
Yeah, I'd say I'm doing pretty good, not only as a person, but also as a Mets fan. Obviously, to see them win six games in a row and be 11 games over 500 for the first time this season has been really cool. Classes have been good, kind of slow. It's kind of crazy that I've already been on campus for over 2 weeks now, so it's kind of flying by, you know?
It doesn't feel like the semester has begun for me yet. Like, that Labor Day weekend kind of just, like, ruined everything. I mean, I only have, like, classes 2 days a week. And
oh, my, like, how'd you manage that?
Oh, lucky.
Just stacking classes back to back to back. So, like, you know,
this is my first, like, semester since freshman year. I'm a senior that I have classes 5 days a week. So I'm having not as much fun.
So we get to enjoy senior year together and kind of just write off here because.
Yes.
And then what grade are you again?
I'm a sophomore.
So you're gonna take the flag once we're done.
Yeah.
This is gonna be like,
this is yours.
Your podcast. This is, you're gonna be in my seat come like next year. Not even next year, like next week. All right. Like
next semester.
I'm
checking
just
out.
I'm just saying. But Let's kind of get into it. Let's talk baseball. I think that's one of, like, my favorite things to do on this at the radio station. Anytime I'm on 101, I feel like I have something to talk about with baseball. If last time I was on 101, I had a great rant for the Yankees. Maybe I'll, you know, go back to
needed.
That. Maybe I'll go back to that during the Yankee segment. But right now, let's start off with some good positive news. The Mets, Citi Field, is active. Currently on a 6-game winning streak. I mean, we've talked about this many times in past weeks with the Mets, with the inconsistency, you can say, that they've had, especially with losing series, tying series, and stuff like that, especially when you're at a point in a year when you're trying to make the wild card at third spot against the Braves, who have been not hot, but I would say they've been good enough to maintain their position. Now Mets see themselves only half a game back with, I want to say, a little benefit to the schedule. I mean, I'm not a Mets fan. I'm not going to hate on the Mets, but the Mets are a good team. Let's put that out there. However, when you have a team like the Chicago White Sox, you're supposed to beat the White Sox. And then you have Boston coming in. Like, that could have been a back-and-forth series, but again, the Mets are clearly the better team. They've proven it, right? And let's just give it like a little rundown of what happened yesterday. You know, they went 7-2 against Boston. David Peterson, I think, has been like one of your best pitchers throughout the year, let alone like recently.
He's been really good.
He's been great. I mean, 6 innings, 11 Ks, nothing more you can ask for. I don't even think he's not even your top two pitchers in your rotation. Like, you would think of him as like fourth, but he's been great as a fourth pitcher in a rotation.
I'd say fourth best, yeah. If you're like actually like sitting down looking at all the numbers,
like,
I'd say he's fourth.
You know, when you add when you add the other guys, I don't know where you would put Quintana, but like
definitely five. But yeah, he's been pretty good.
He's
recently.
Been pretty good, but he struggled first half of the season, which was really difficult to see.
It doesn't look like it at this point. Like
his numbers this past 2 weeks have been really great.
Yeah, if you want to talk about the past 2 weeks, I mean, I think he's been the best. Yeah, last 15 days, I have it up right here. Derek Peterson is pitching to a 1.77 ERA, 2-0.
incredible.
He's been that great. But then, of course, you can't just only rely on the pitching. You have Lindor, who's continuing his like MVP campaign season with a home run. He's putting up numbers that you haven't seen since Alex Rodriguez at shortstop. You know, 5 seasons of 30 home runs. Mind you, Alex Rodriguez is my favorite player of all time.
Oh, my God, me too.
Really? Oh, this is amazing. I love this podcast already. 2 Yankee fans and 2 A-Rod fans. Can't get any better than this. So when we talk about Lindor and I compare him to, like, A-Rod, it's like, yeah, he should be – he's the MVP of the team, clearly. He's the best player. He's one of the best players in the NL, as is. Like, he is the reason why the Mets are, like, on top. And you can agree or disagree with me that, but Lindor has been leading the Mets in, like, every category, if it's average, if it's RBIs. He's only behind Alonso in home runs by 1. So it's like he's like your Triple Crown winner on the Mets alone, right? And we talked about Lindor in the beginning of the season as like he needs to show up because he was ice cold beginning of the season. Like he was nowhere near Cleveland himself or even just his career self. And now you see him in MVP talks. Is he, I guess I'll throw this question out, is he the reason why the Mets are not only on this 6-game winning streak, but now 1/2 game to the wild card? Or are there just more pieces to the puzzle that you think the Mets are just finally clicking?
In my opinion, I have to say that obviously Lindor, in my opinion, I'm the most biased Mets fan you'll ever be, along with Kurt.
Unbiased.
Along with Kurt behind the booth. Shout out to him. He's a Mets fan as well. But baseball is a team sport, and the Mets have really good depth. They have all the pieces around them to hopefully go far in the playoffs. Well, that's if they make the playoffs, which obviously I think they will. I'm always going to tell you the Mets will make the playoffs. They could be the worst team in baseball. I would still say, oh, there's a chance. Like, if this, and that happens, they can find a way. But I feel like, imagine if Lindor didn't play ice cold the first 2 months of baseball. Imagine if he was, like, as good as he is now, but, like, the whole season. Do you think he would be far and away the MVP over Ohtani? Like, that's
I wouldn't say far and away. But I would say the Mets should easily be either the second best team in the division or fighting Philly for that top spot, because the Mets have been the best team since maybe June, like May. Like I think they I remember reading a stat. I think they've been like 53-31 in their last how many games that is. But like clearly the best team in the league, and you say it to a point. Like if Lindor didn't start off cold. And not just Lindor, like the rest of the team didn't start off cold. Like, where could the Mets be at this point of the year? But now we talk about, like, Lindor having to be this MVP candidate just for the Mets to kind of get out of the dry spell that they were in the beginning of the season. Because beginning of the season, talk about the Mets, they were like a laughingstock in New York. All right. And I'm not trying to say this as a Yankee fan or I'm trying to be as unbiased as possible. But you talk about the Mets, you just thought it was going to be another useless season, look for 2025. I mean, that was a lot of the talks happening during the trade deadline. Like, are we going to look for 2025? Are we going to fight for the playoffs? But now, if you see the play that they've been doing now, you wouldn't think those conversations are even happening during the season, because like, that's how good the Mets have been. And Lindor has been, you know, we can talk about Lindor this whole podcast. He's been the number one guy on the team, but just look at the rest of the roster on the offensive side. Last 15 games, 15 days, Lindor is leading the average, and then you have Vientos, who's been amazing with his power and just average in general. Jesse Winker looks like a great pickup for you guys from the trade deadline. I mean, it's just your roster. Jeff McNeil has been actually pretty good, and I had to pick him up in fantasy.
And you're forgetting about one person. Me and Kurt were talking about Mark Vientos.
I can't forget about him.
He does not get enough credit for how good he's been this season, batting .281, 22 home runs, 50 RBIs. 881 OPS, which is really good. I did not think Mark Vientos was going to be this good, and I definitely don't think he gets enough credit for how good he's been, because he was towards the bottom of the line at the beginning of the season, and now Carlos Mendoza has put him sometimes as a second man, and he has proven that he's been really good this season. I just don't think that Mark Vientos gets enough praise for how good he's been.
Was he going back and forth between minors and majors as well this season?
Or I think so. Maybe towards like the beginning of the year, but now he's obviously solidified himself as a really good player for this team, and he's been very crucial at third base.
I mean, one of the best third basemen, I would say, in the NL recently. Like, that's a guy you kind of want on your team in the middle of your lineup, right? Like, if you perfect situation, you have Lindor as your leadoff. Vientos, he looks like he's a 3-4-5 kind of hitter in a good lineup, and he's producing that kind of production. I must say, like, it's truly, like, we're talking about a guy, like I said, like, he was going, bouncing back and forth, didn't have a position for him, and now he kind of, like, earned it for himself. And that's his spot. Like, no one's going to take it from him. And he's been, quite honestly, probably the second-best player behind Lindor during this stretch. But let's kind of go more in depth about this stretch, right? We can keep talking all about the stats with the Mets and, you know, how good they've been. But, like, it all started, right, against Arizona and San Diego when – no, not even. It started between Baltimore, San Diego, and Arizona. Those were three series that we thought, like, all right, the Mets either need to lock in these three series or you're going to see after the outcome, like, all right, they're probably not a playoff team, right? Now, they win the Baltimore series. Two walk-offs. I would say thank you very much for that as Yankee fans. Helped us in a moment. Hasn't helped us anymore after that, right? And then for the San Diego series, that was a split. That was a four-game split, right? And that's something you would take. Oh, no. Was it a four-game split? Yeah, four-game split, right? And that's something that you would take against San Diego. I mean, they're one of the best wild-card teams right now, and they have shown it. And then you beat Arizona, which I thought was going to be more closer series. And after you kind of got through that stretch of playoff wild card teams, however you want to say it, it kind of got easier for you guys. The schedule's getting a little easier. You had Chicago White Sox, who you should have swept. And, I mean, as a Yankee fan, I know we couldn't do it, so. Hurts a little bit to see you guys can. But after Chicago, right, you have Boston. Boston is fighting for the playoffs. To see that you guys can beat Boston, that's a good step in the direction, right? Then you have, I don't want to say an easy route, but Cincinnati and Toronto, I would say those should be easy series wins. I'm not going to call it sweeps. I'm going to say easy series wins.
Yeah, they should be easy wins. I have no doubt that I don't think they lose either of those series.
Yeah, I don't think so either. But then now we go into Philadelphia, which I think that's like your real test, right? You have Philadelphia in the middle of September, where if I was to look up like Atlanta Braves' schedule, because that's ultimately like the team that you're trying to, you know, catch up, I don't think, look, as good as the Mets have been, I don't think you're catching up to Arizona or San Diego. Just my opinion.
That's fair. I agree. That's fair.
I mean, I'm not trying to be biased here. Okay, Lauren, back me up here. It's all right.
I have a lot to say about the Mets against the White Sox. So as soon as we're done looking at their schedule, I need to go into it because they're not as good as you guys are making them out to be, especially against that White Sox team. They needed to be a lot better.
I had Kurt telling me in my ear that they can catch them. I'm going to let you keep the hope behind the scenes, all right, bro? If you guys do, kudos to you guys. I mean, it's been a hell of a season. Like, it's been like a true grind. But Arizona and San Diego they've shown that they can be difference makers. Like, they really improve their rosters. They really have a complete team. So, I'm not saying the Mets don't have a complete team. They still have, I feel like, more holes compared to San Diego and Arizona.
Only four games back from San Diego, by the way, just to throw that out there.
Okay. Only four games back, which is,
and if there's a tiebreaker, like the Mets have the tiebreaker over the Padres and the Diamondbacks, so that also comes into play, you know, when it comes to October.
We're at the point of the season where I think four games back truly is not a lot to make up, even though we only have like a little less than like 25 games left.
It'd be different if every team was in such different spots, but because every team seems to have like the exact same wins and loss ratios, like anything's really possible at this point, which is kind of crazy to see because we never really see this in September.
No, we don't. Like, by September, you kind of have, like, all right, these teams are going to make the playoffs. These teams are not, right? But, like, you see all the...
There's so much unknown
right
now.
We'll talk about that later in the podcast. We'll talk about the unknown and a parity in baseball this year. But, yeah, anything can happen. Yes, the Mets can overtake Arizona. Mets can overtake San Diego. But just, I don't know, anything can happen. And real quick before, you know, we cut down the winning streak, just looking at the remaining of the schedule, when I talked about Philly... For the Mets, they play Philly around the middle of September, and that's the same time where the Braves play the Dodgers. So two teams fighting for the third wild card spot, gonna have tough matchups. But then after Atlanta takes care of the Dodgers, they have the Reds and Marlins, and then Royals before like the Mets series. I think the Mets series will be the deciding factor in the wild card spot at the end of September. But just looking at the series before and after the Mets, you have the Reds, Marlins, and Royals for the Braves. And then for the Mets, you have Washington, Philadelphia, and Milwaukee. So it's a little tougher route, I would say, for the Mets. It truly is like they have to like beat Atlanta in that second to last series of the year, I think, to really solidify the wild card spot. But we talk about anything can happen. I mean, it's a good spot if you're a Met fan right now to be at. Like, take care of the games that's coming up now. Clearly, they took care of games in Chicago, and I know you have a lot to say about that.
Okay, so first, I just want to start with the good. We kind of covered this already, but pitching was so incredible. I loved Manaea's start on Sunday. He had 7 shutout innings, which is the third time he's done that this season. I think he's really grown as a player in this Mets rotation, and it's just been so incredible for this Mets team and everything. And then just moving over to their bullpen really quick, they showed real strength this series too. I know a few weeks ago their bullpen was really worrisome. They were not really able to get it together, but they seemed to like be able to pull it off in the Chicago series. They only gave up 1 run during game 2, and that was it. They had the other 2 games shut out. But with all that good, there's still a few aspects of this team that are really worrisome. First, Alvarez's slump. I know it was talked about a little bit last week. He just cannot hit the ball for anything. And I am a type of person where I don't need my catcher to be a 300 average hitter, but I need him to be able to get on base sometimes. He went for 1-for-8 in Chicago. He can't hit against the worst team in baseball. That's really, like, saying something. Like, who could he hit against then?
I can tell you a lot of people who couldn't hit against Chicago.
Okay. Specifically 9 people, but we don't need to talk about that. I was on the episode with Bradley a few weeks ago where we were talking about his walk-off homer, and I was so hopeful that this was like his awakening moment. Remember who he was, what he could add to this team. And it just never seemed to click for him, which is just so upsetting. And then, you know, sticking on offensive side, these strikeouts for the Mets are absolutely horrendous. On Sunday, the Mets had 16 strikeouts. There's 27 strikeouts in a game. How do you have 16 of them being strikeouts?
That's not a good
look.
Which
is a new season high for the Mets. Their previous one was 14. It's an awful number. Last night, before last night's game, I did not update this number. But the 13 games before yesterday, they struck out 136 times. The Mets are in a position where every single game is crucial. They need to win every single game. You know, we were looking at their schedule. It's really tough.
Yeah.
And the strikeout is the least effective at bat. Nothing can come from it. And they just need effectiveness in order to get to the playoffs.
And you talk about Alvarez's struggles. Looking at the numbers, just forget about the Chicago series as is. He's been batting 125. I mean, since the walk-off home run, I don't think he has a home run since. 2 RBIs, 4 hits, 12 strikeouts. I mean, There's a lot. Like, I'm
so
looking
maybe
at
he's all the strikeouts for the Mets, actually.
No,
maybe it's not
even
the whole team.
You got Lindor's been great, 12 strikeouts. Alonso, 21. Vientos, 18. Martinez, 17. Alvarez, 12. Marte, 13. So, like, there's clearly a strikeout problem happening in Queens right now. And, like you say, Lauren, like, strikeouts are the worst productive at-bat that you can
I'd rather see
have.
A fly-out foul ball with a runner on base so he could tag up. Like, base running is so important. I would love to see some small ball on this Mets team. Just get on base somehow and then let your lineup do the rest of the work.
Do they have the players to play small ball, though?
I think you would have to. You're in a position where you need to make the playoffs. Like, you are so close. It's going to hurt if you don't make it. You make any adjustment you can make in order to win.
But would you switch up your play style even though you don't have players that can play small ball? Just so
I'd like
to
see Jesse Winker try and do a bunt. Like, okay. I don't need him to hit a home run every single time.
That's not a bad choice to.
And then allow, like, you know, Alonso was probably on base before Winker got up. Allow Alonso to run the bases.
I know how good Lindor's been, but he's someone that can play small ball if needed to, I think. Like, he's a guy that he changes the game no matter what he does. Like, he'll drop down the bunt or he'll bloop a single. He'll hit the home run and get the clutch RBI, right? He's like a 5-2 player in that aspect. Like, he knows situational. He knows what to do in that situation. Like, if he has to get on base, that's the guy you want to trust. So I think he's someone, if you want to go small ball, someone you can trust. But then, I mean, the lineup is full of power.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you want to compare them to the Yankees. Like, what 2 power teams in New York. Alonso, you're not expecting to play small ball.
No,
he's,
of course not.
He's almost like home run or
but that's
or
why
strikeout.
I like Alonso in the 4 spot, because you already get a runner on base somehow.
Okay.
Then you allow Alonso to run him in.
I would say someone that you can probably think of for small ball is like Harrison Bader, but he's been god awful.
Yeah,
the last
I feel like
Bader
games.
Out of the lineup.
Yeah, so that's
as much
not even
he's
a
been better on the defensive end, but I just feel like if you're focusing on like on the offensive aspect, like you need to take him. And I'm a Bader guy myself. I like Bader, but...
Oh, I still love Bader.
It's just he's not been good.
And then, I mean, you can also throw in Nimmo, but he's kind of been, like, 233 in the last 12 games.
Okay, I'm not going to tolerate any Brendan Nimmo slander on this episode today. I'm sorry.
I'm not even trying to slander the man.
Nimmo,
he's a great guy.
The Mets need to figure out how to get on base and stop striking out. That's just the bottom line. Like, they need to stop striking out. You have to have more productive outs.
Because we talked about stats-wise, like, your pitching has been one of the best in baseball, let alone just...
Which I wasn't expecting, to be honest. If you told me this in May, no.
And but I'm just going to talk about, like, just recently. I mean, like, Manaea, Sorvino, Pearson, those three-headed... That's a three-headed horse in your starting rotation that has been pitching, like, all-stars. I mean, Manaea, 2-0, 2.61 ERA. Sorvino, 2-0, 3.24 ERA. Pearson, I said earlier, 1.77, 2-0. Like... Those are guys, and even Quintana. Let me not forget about Quintana. He's been good, too, looking at these numbers. Like, those are four guys. That's your playoff rotation right there, and you're seeing them shine right now when it's crucial, like when you have to win games. So that's a great sign if you're a Met fan or just follow the Mets in general. So now you need the offense to kind of, like, reciprocate that. Like, you need them to do their thing. But when you have an offense that's, I don't want to say only relying on Lindor, but, like, he's obviously, like...
They're not only relying on Lindor. I can tell you that right now.
But he's the one guy that stands out.
His name's in every... his name's in the title of every single article. It's Lindor brings the Mets home once again.
Exactly.
And that's,
I'll give you that. But I feel like you're forgetting about the other pieces that the Mets have. You're forgetting about Pete Alonso. You're forgetting about Brendan Nimmo.
I don't want to forget about those pieces. It's just... They don't show up in the situational moments as a Lindor
Lindor's
does.
Doing the heavy work for
I
this
can't
team.
Argue with that.
And he
that's,
can't
you know.
Do that every single game. Like, you can't rely on Lindor to always get your winning homer.
That's like throwing the argument to the Yankees. Like, you can't rely on Soto and Judge to always get you your RBIs, right? Like, you need Alonso to get the hits when it matters also, not just get on base and then rely on other people to bring him in, right? Vientos, he's shown that he has a little clutch factor into him. So I'm not going to throw his name out there that much. But, like, Martinez, where are you right now? He's been struggling. Winker's a good pickup. We talked about that. You need Alvarez back. You need Marte back. You need McNeil to stay how he's been. But, like, still, you need Mets. You need other Met players to be clutch. Like, you need them to come in. I want a headline the next day saying, Alonso, three-run home run to win the game. Go-ahead home run, right? It's always Lindor, chase MVP. Lindor, clutch RBI in the eighth, right? What happens if a team now throws him a little Aaron Judge moment? Intentional walk Lindor, bases loaded now. You got to rely on the next guy up, strikes out, right? So, like, who's that next guy that's going to come up for the Mets in this stretch? And I'm going to ask that as a question. Like, who do you think?
You know what? As much as I want to say Brendan Nimmo because he's my favorite player on this roster, he has been shut. Honestly, besides Lindor, if I need one player on this team right now to, like, clear the bases – get that grand slam or three-run home or whatever, I'd say Mark Vientos. As much as, you know, he should be higher up in the batting order, if you need to put him on cleanup, I would trust Mark Vientos more than anybody else on this team. I mean, obviously Pete Alonso is leading the team in home runs, but he really has been struggling a little bit, and Vientos is hitting .281, which speaks for itself. So if I had to choose somebody, I'd probably choose Mark Vientos to be that next guy up.
I'm looking at you guys' lineup from yesterday. Right.
I wrote this down. I loved the lineup from yesterday. I think that was, like, probably the most successful, like, effectiveness lineup that they've had all season. I love that Harrison Bader was not in the starting lineup. Like, no, because I don't mean that as a bad way to Harrison Bader, but, like, these are, like, the guys that, like, are able to do something that they're, yes, some of them are slumping right now, but they have proven to the team that they're able to get out of it. Whereas Harrison Bader has not really proven to the Mets yet that he's able to get out of these slumps that he's put himself in.
I think the only change in his lineup is Martinez at DH, and then Winker will move to left field, McNeil second.
They have to start Jesse Winker. I don't know what
Mendoza
is.
Oh, no.
Yes.
No, of course. He needs to start, but, like, I'm just saying,
Jesse,
like...
I want to see Jesse Winker in left field.
Jesse Winker should not be pinch hitting every game.
No.
Oh, no. Of course not. He's the kind of guy that you need to be in the lineup, right? He also, like, breaks up the lineup as a left-handed hitter. He's not only, like, a... He's not Lindor... not Lindor. He's not Alonso in the aspect of, oh, he's a home run or, like, a strikeout kind of guy. Like, he can actually hit for average. That's why I like him either in front of or behind a guy like Alonso. But if you add Martinez in the lineup, then break up Alonso and Martinez with a Winker, right? Like, I think a playoff lineup for you guys, Lindor shortstop, Nimmo and Vientos can flip-flop second and third, but then if you put Vientos as your second hitter, Nimmo's not your third hitter, in my opinion.
So as much as I hate to admit it, I don't like the Brandon Nimmo slander, but he should probably be second. I don't trust him to be third.
I like him as the two-hitter.
I agree. I'm just thinking, like, playoff-wise, maybe Nimmo actually, I see him more down the lineup. I'm thinking a Lindor, Vientos, Alonso, Winker, Martinez.
Winker is your cleanup?
Winker is my cleanup, yeah.
Interesting.
I like Winker as a cleanup. Martinez fifth. And
DH
then,
fifth?
And then...
That I don't mind. I like DH as a fifth.
But I mean, you can have your DH as your ninth hitter. I mean, it's...
I know, but would you rather have... Well, I'm trying to think if I'm just thinking of JD Martinez or Jesse Winker as the cleanup.
I'm thinking of the... I'm thinking of...
That's a question you have to ask.
You have to split up Alonso and Martinez in a Winker lineup, in my opinion. I don't know if I want both Alonso and Martinez hitting back and back to back in the lineup when I know that they're both like either they're going to power you an extra base hit if that's a double or home run, or they're most likely going to get you a strikeout and an out. You know, when you know Winker, let's say Alonso gets on base, you can kind of trust more that Winker will hit the contact and move Alonso up the bases or even score him more than Martinez will probably score Alonso, which it's almost like Martinez has to hit, like I said, like an extra base hit or has to hit a home run. Martinez is not the guy I think is going to get you the situational single. And I could be wrong. I mean, no, I don't watch the Mets games like that, but
I kind of agree.
I just think those are just, when it comes to playoffs, you need to think situational. So you can't, I don't think you can have like your power just back to back to back when you know that your power are high strikeout guys. And if you're in a situation where like you have Lindor and Vientos on base, you want to get that first run, but then you know like your next two hitters are most like high strikeout probabilities and they just strike out and now you're still stuck second and first or even third and second, then now you got two outs and you're relying on Winker on a two-out situation to get a single. I'm not saying you can't do it, but I'd rather Winker in like a one-out situation get a single with people on base or even a no-out situation, you know?
No, I agree with that. That's fair. That's a fair assessment.
I'm just looking out for you guys. I'm just saying. I'm looking out for the
Mets.
I
have a lot of hope for the Mets. I want them to do well. Like, I'm not trying to set them up for disaster or anything.
No. I would love for both New York teams to make the playoffs, and then we can have the conversation in the playoffs, like, who goes further? What's going
to
happen?
Well, we already know the answer to that question, but we'll save it for another time.
I mean...
We actually don't know.
We don't know the answer then.
I'm sure you guys know my... I'm sure you guys and Kurt know my answer.
Oh, we know both our answers, right? Mets are taking it all this year, of course. But then when I
just
start...
Just like how they were going to do it last year and next year. They're doing it every year.
Well, when
year.
They get Soto next year, we'll
okay.
come back.
Let's not
it's
get
not
going to
happen. Like, we're not going to... You know,
10 years, $800 million.
This is how we're going to end off the Mets segment right now. When I look at the playoffs, I talked about this earlier in the show. They're half a game from Atlanta. Atlanta is not a team where I'm expecting them to slump. So I feel like the Mets are going to have to play to Atlanta's, like...
Level.
Yeah.
If the Mets... I think whichever team slumps first, they're done.
I think whatever team wins that series between Mets and Atlanta is getting their playoffs. But I don't think any other series matters. The whole season's going to be building up for that series. Like, whoever wins 100%. That series is... getting that playoff spot, like, that's it. Because after that, there's only one more series left. And by that time, the gap may be big enough where that team will lock it in.
And I agree. Now, that's second to last series of the year. That's three-game series as well. I think if it's the same situation, half a game back, yeah, that's definitely going to be like, all right, that's going to tell you who's going to be the third wild card.
Because half a game back with three games left is difficult.
You win the series. You're in the playoffs. In that situation, just win a series. You only have a game back. You just got to win a series. But if either the Mets or let's say the Braves in this case, if they're even a game or two behind before that series begins, then now we're looking at Atlanta and Mets series as like, you can't just win a series. You have to sweep the team.
Yeah, if the Mets are further than a game and a half back before that series, unless they sweep, I don't know.
You can't afford a loss. Especially
the
when
Brewers
have
also been a good team too. So
you have Philly, Atlanta, and Milwaukee.
You're
back
facing
to back
Philly
to back.
Twice, like two more times this
that's
season.
Right.
Which is really tough. And as I was saying before, like the offense needs to pick it up. Like if you can't go into these Philly series striking out 16 times a game.
Yeah, because Philly, let alone they have like Cy Young candidates on their starting rotation. Their bullpen is not that bad as well. And honestly, we know how good their offense is. Like, you have to match up to the Nola, to the Wheeler, to Suarez, right? And I'm not saying your rotation can't. I know your rotation can. All right, that's not the issue. Can your offense? That's
like
a question.
Like, runs are what wins games.
Exactly. You have to score to win the game, right?
I love quoting one of Paul O'Neill's keys to the game from last season. More than zero. You got to score more than zero runs to win the game.
I love that. I love that so much. As we kind of just close this segment, let's just end off with a prediction. Do the Mets make the playoffs as a third wild card, or do they miss?
I say they miss. I think the Braves got them beat. Not by much. I think it's by going to be like half a game or a game. Like, I think it's going
to
be a really close,
like,
heartbreaking match.
Yeah. Okay.
But I do think the Braves take it.
I'm going to have to disagree. Not only is a biased Mets fan, but it's going to be a half a game. I think it's going to be a half a game, but I think the Mets are going to win that series and then just not look back the last three games.
I hope you're right. I want the Mets to win.
I'm going to, as unbiased as I can be, I'm going to say the Mets missed the playoffs. I think they have to capitalize with the series they have now, after they started with Chicago. But once they get to the first series against Philadelphia, they need to be in the third wild card spot, or they're missing the playoffs. I think if you come into the Philly, like, even though you have Washington in between the two Philly series, for some reason, you guys against the NL East is always an interesting game. And so the Nationals can easily just beat you guys one game and just ends up being like a difference maker. But if you're not in the playoffs by September 13th, that's when the Philly series starts, I don't think you guys are going to make it. I'm sorry.
Well, I guess we each have our own opinion.
You're right. And that's why I love being on podcasts, just to hear other opinions. But let's kind of go to the Bronx. It's not a happy time in the Bronx. I'll say that. And
well, Fordham football starting, but obviously the first game.
Oh, of course. Mm-hmm. You want to talk about Fordham football? The first game. The highlight was on Bleacher Report.
No, not.
It was on ESPN nightly too, the same day. I was watching. I think I watched the Colorado game, and the first highlight that you saw on SportsCenter was the 100-yard
yikes
kickoff return from Bowling Green. Yeah, the.
Maybe we'll stick with the Yankees.
Let's stick with the better team in the Bronx.
I guess the less disappointing team in the Bronx.
Yeah, let's stick with that team in the Bronx. I don't even want to talk about Fordham football, all right? Or Fordham Sports and Journal. They're always some type of conversation to happen. But let's talk about the Yankees, right? They started their series against the Texas Rangers, defending World Series champions. Even though they haven't been playing like the defending World Series champions, they are still, you know, still got to recognize them as that. Yankees win the first game of the series behind Cole. I was scared when he got out the game before the seventh inning, but
yeah, me too.
Cramps. All right,
he's all good now.
We all have cramps. All right, that's okay. I have calf cramps all the day, all the time. But when you have a performance like Rendon had yesterday, 6 innings, 11 strikeouts, one hit was a home run, but still, he get one run throughout 6 innings and 11 strikeouts. You have to win that game.
Especially given, like, how much Carlos Rodon has been up and down this season. Like, that was one of his best games I've seen from him. And the Yankees blew it.
I want to say the best game. Not just one of I think the best game that he's had this season.
Pretty sure it was a season high, right? 11 strikeouts for him?
Yes.
Oh, good
season high and season high, career high with the Yankees as well. 11 strikeouts. Like,
so probably his best game by far this season.
Mm-hmm. By far as a Yankee. Like, if you want to consider last year too. Like, by far his best game as a Yankee. And Rendon's a guy I've never hated, even though I've seen him struggle. I've seen him look like the worst pitcher in the league. I've never hated him. I feel like he has that grit and grind that, like, I want him in my playoff rotation. Like, I know he can shove a lineup. And he shoved it yesterday. But the Yankees just, for some reason, cannot hit off a lefty pitcher.
But overall, I think yesterday, you know, you scored 4 runs. That was pretty good for Yankees up against the lefty. So I'm not that worried for the offensive side. What I'm worried about, which I know we will get into, is the bullpen and the closing situation. But overall, I think the Yankees have, like, a lot of good going for them right now, despite these tough series losses. You know, Austin Wells is just absolutely incredible.
Best catcher in New York right now.
Rookie of the year, question mark?
You see, I want him. I'm gonna say this very unbiased. I want him to win Rookie of the Year. Especially
I don't think
he
will.
He's not going to, because you know
it would be fun if he did.
The writers are just not going to pick a Yankee. I'm just being serious right here. Like Wells, in my opinion, has been better than Colton in Baltimore. Comparing numbers wise, they're gonna not give it to Wells because like he didn't start the season off high or like he didn't start.
And
the season
I understand
off
that. Like that's the reason why and everything. Like, but overall for the Yankees, he's been really good. And Anthony Rizzo's back. He has proved himself to be better than when he left. You know, he's hitting incredible.
Oh, we needed that first base.
Like, I was so worried when with him coming back. And he never really seemed to recover that well from his concussion hitting-wise. Mm-hmm. But it seemed that this rehab start really helped him out. And, you know, he's had 2 games, 3 hits, and 2 of those hits were doubles. And he's already at 3 RBIs. So I'm not worried for the offensive side of the Yankees. I think that they're going to be just fine.
I agree to disagree. I have some worries still. We are kind of entering a stretch where our 2 best hitters in the lineup are
slumping.
Yeah,
but Judge has it's just not hitting a home run. Like they're still getting
I'm
hits.
Not worried
their
about the
averages are fine.
Judge is batting to a 250 average his last 13 games.
Okay, maybe I
that's
read the wrong. I thought
little,
that was a 3.
A little worrisome. That's all right. It doesn't look like a lot because the man was batting like 334.
Yes.
Now he's batting like 325. That's how I knew, like, all right, something's wrong. Like, he went down like 10 decimal points. And then you kind of have Wells, not in a slump, but 229. Soto's the true guy in a slump. He's batting 216 his last 13 games.
He really struggled against Washington, like, at that stadium, and I just don't think, like, he was able to bounce back from that yet.
And they showed a stat during the game yesterday. He's, I think, 1-for-21 in his last 21 at-bats against left-handed pitching. So, let alone Soto is a guy that can hit lefties, hit righties. He's, you know, he's struggling when you see something like that. Let me give my love to Stanton too. Stanton, since coming back, has been exactly the kind of guy you want in the middle of your lineup. You know, you always knew Stanton he's gonna hard contact, right? Obviously not a small ball kind of guy. You know, he's gonna strike out a lot, but you know he's gonna hit a home run. You know he can hit for extra bases, and he's gonna get a hard single. And he's batting 262 since coming back. 5 home runs, 2 RBIs. I'm just saying. He's been as advertised. The other guy who's been just out of this world, and I'm like loving this pickup right now for the Yankees, Jazz Chisholm Jr., has been wow.
He's quickly become one
just
of my favorite
wow.
people on this roster.
Oh yeah, and mind you, like we're both A-Rod fans. I know when you see someone wear number 13 on Yankees,
at
you kind of cringe.
Base too.
You kind of like what's going on here? But I don't think I don't mind Chisholm taking that jersey right now.
I think
third
he's
base.
Doing it some like good. A lot better than Joey Gallo did wearing
it.
We
don't talk about Joey Gallo over here in this podcast. Joey Gallo's name should not be on this podcast. But batting 375 since joining the Yankees, I mean, 9 home runs. Like, it's just, he's the guy that you needed in the deadline because you needed that kind of contact, speed, like just someone that can just not damage the game, but actually, no, damage the game in a good way.
Yeah.
Because if you were the Yankees before getting Chisholm, it was, if you don't hit the home run, you're losing the game. If you don't have a starting pitcher, get 6 innings scoreless, you're losing the game. Chisholm, you've seen in the Texas series, in the Cardinals series, he is a problem on the base pass in a good way. You get him on base, not only is he going to steal the bag, but he's going to make it tough on opposing pitchers that they are worried about him on base. He's scoring in many ways that you can think of. You don't just need to get the hit with Chisholm. He's scoring by the wild pitch. He's scoring by stealing bases, like I said. But then also situational, he's getting the RBI. So, like, that's the guy where you bring him in. You know he has never played third base in his professional career. You don't know what you're going to get. And there's been some growing pains with him at third base. I'm not going to say it was perfect. And I don't even want to say he's been good. I want to say he's been average third baseman. But
solid.
You're taking. No, yeah, solid. You're
like,
taking it for sure.
Looking at who has been the Yankees' third baseman as of late.
I don't want to.
But that's what I'm saying. It's like Jazz Chisholm's like exceeded all Yankees' expectations for third base the past season. You know, you had DJ LeMahieu, Oswaldo Cabrera. And like Jazz Chisholm's just like such like a nice awakening. Like, hey, I'm here now.
I think that's a great way of putting it. He's a great awakening for the Yankees. Because when you think of the Yankees, like I said, you either Judge is a great player, but like besides Judge, you were thinking, all right, home run, strikeout, home run, Chisholm can get the single, the double, steal the bag. He has so much speed, beat it out an infield single. Like, I love having Chisholm in the lineup because you have Volpe as your shortstop, who's supposed to be a similar player as Chisholm. And I've honestly seen Volpe duplicate Chisholm since he's been on the roster, like, perfectly. I think Chisholm has given Volpe some kind of, like, confidence in a way to almost play how he's supposed to play. And both of them together on the base pass has been just, like, amazing. Like, it's just
it really has.
Incredible.
Neither of them are scared to be aggressive on the bases.
The only thing I'll say with Volpe is his aggression kind of goes down a little bit.
It backfires
depending on the situation he's in. I think he kind of like overthinks it a little bit. Like,
but that'll go away with time. Like, he's still like very new to the league and everything. He's still learning
course,
the ropes.
Yeah.
Like, I think give him another, like, obviously I'm so happy with how he's been performing this season and even last season, but giving him another season, I think we'll be seeing some really great growth from him.
Yeah, and I think having Chisholm in the lineup, especially I've been seeing them hit back to back in the lineup, I think that's perfect in a great situation. Volpe, he sees a guy like Chisholm on base, and I think he can feel like himself.
Yes.
Because he sees, like, all right, he's not worried. Chisholm's going to advance doing his way. And now when Volpe's on base, he's not worried about overthinking if he should steal or not, because he knows Chisholm is a risk taker. He knows he's going to take that third base back. And Volpe's like, all right, I'm just going to follow. They just kind of like...
they work together in a way that we really haven't seen before on this Yankees team. Like,
I don't know
when
the last time I've even seen
exactly.
it on the Yankees team. That's a great thing to say. Now, I can keep on talking about the Yankee offense, and there's numbers to prove that the offense has been still the best in the league or American League, even though you see the struggles. But clearly the elephant in the room that I think we have to talk about.
I don't think it's that big of an elephant. It's a big issue.
No, it's bad. I think what we have to talk about is the pitching, let alone
bullpen pitching.
Because starting pitching has not been bad. Rendon, not bad. Cole, not bad. I got to give my flowers to Cortez as well, too. Like,
He's really been better.
I hate on Cortez. Like, I'm going to be so honest. As a Yankee fan, I hate on Cortez every time I see him pitch. But he has shut me up. I'll say that. And Showman, he's up. He's back and forth. I don't know what to really give Showman right now. Like,
he's on a 3-game win streak, to be fair.
Games
in a row.
I'm a fan of Showman. Like, I love Showman. I like him pitching. I personally want him in my starting rotation in the playoffs. A lot of people disagree with me on that aspect, but Showman is a guy that I feel like I can trust. Like, he's just consistent.
And he shows that he cares about the game. Like, if he gives up a hit or something, you could tell he's upset about it.
Yeah.
And, like, he'll make that fix for the next batter.
Now, we can talk about the starting rotation all we want. That's another positive point about the Yankees. The bullpen. That's all I can say. Like, the bullpen
has
been...
it's not even the whole bullpen. It's just our 9 innings.
Honestly, it's been the whole bullpen. Like, stats...
I disagree.
Numbers-wise, it looks bad.
It doesn't seem bad, like, during the games, though. Like, I love Luke Weaver. He had that one bad start a few weeks ago, but other than that, he's great. I love Tommy Kahnle.
Weaver is the only... I think Weaver's the only guy that has a respectable, like, ERA the past couple of days. And him and Tim Hill... Tim Hill, for some reason, he's a funny guy.
Tim Hill makes me laugh because
yeah.
Where did he come? Like, I don't remember how he got like, here. He's just here and he's like on the mound
the
sometimes.
He's just there for the ride. Like, I'm thinking every day, like, is he gonna get DFA one of these moments? And then, but I see him come.
And then he comes back. I'm like, I thought.
I see him come out from the bullpen. Like, he shoves. He's not bad. Like, but other than Weaver, Jake Cousins, he may look good when you watch him. Numbers-wise, has not supported him. 6.75 ERA last couple of games. 7 games, to be exact. Mark Leader.
I don't like him. I think that was a bad trade acquisition.
Oh,
like, he has not fit well into this Yankees bullpen, unfortunately. And I really wanted to like him.
I wanted to like him, too. Because when I was working at MLB this summer, right? And I was dealing with, like, the trade deadline. And I see the Yankees trade for him. And I'm looking at, like, the highlights and stuff like that of Leader. I'm like, all right. Not bad. Good pitcher that we can get. He looked all right for the Cubs. He has not looked all right for the Yankees.
Very different atmospheres.
He's almost at the level where, like, you can respectfully, like, DFA him. Like, that's kind of, like, how bad he's been. They're not going to, with the prospects they gave up for him, but like he's been that bad. And then Tommy Canley, like he may look good again. These players look good when you watch them, but like their underlying numbers really don't support them in the terms of like how confident you are down the stretch with those guys. Canley, 4.50 ERA, right? And then Tim Mesa was another weird guy who actually looks good right now. But Scott Efros, who was a guy, I was so high on coming back. I really wanted him to come back. And I mean, it's one sample size. I'm not going to overreact.
Yeah, I think we need to give him like another like outing, see how he does
again. I have hope for him still, yeah. Because he was good.
He was really good before he went down an injury. And
yeah.
Overall, I think I didn't like really check out his rehab assignment and everything. But on Twitter, I thought he did really well.
No, yeah.
I think just coming back, he was a little unnerved. Like, he was just not in it fully, unfortunately. And I think giving him another like option and everything, not an option, but like another chance.
Chance, yeah.
Yes.
Like during his rehab assignment, he was good. Not just good, actually. He was great because he wasn't giving up runs, not really giving up the hits. Like, he was getting the strikeouts. I'm like, why is he still in AAA? That was my reaction after his rehab, because like the bullpen has been that bad. I'm thinking like Efros, why is he not here yet? And he gets called up and we see why. But that's okay. The guy that we really have to talk about, especially after yesterday's walk-off grand slam, is Clay Holmes. I know we kind of just touched on the bullpen and the other pitchers in the bullpen, how they've struggled, but I think Clay Holmes is the headline when it comes to struggle. Like,
I just don't think he's a closer, you know. I feel like it's talked about every week on this podcast. Like, it's just such a topic that's talked about because he has shown his struggle as a closer for basically his entire Yankees career, I feel like, since he's been a closer for them. You know, he's had his highs, he's had his lows. Like, in the beginning of the season, he was the best closer in baseball, and it was like, wow.
By far.
Maybe I was wrong. So last season, I was like, I don't like him as our closer either.
It wasn't even close.
Like, and then he started, I was like, wow, this is really good. But I would still get nervous whenever I saw him run out of the bullpen into the ninth inning with only a one-run lead. And that just really proved my point last night. He's not good in those high-stress situations. You know, he got the bases loaded. That was like, you can't even like two runners on the base in the ninth inning as a closer. That's like,
you can't let anybody in the base in the ninth inning.
Like, it's just, especially in only a one-run lead, like, it's just not going to work out for you. And, you know, his pitches weren't really working last night. He had very little control over the ball. But it was just not a good outing for Clay Holmes. And once again, he like blew the save. I know we said the number earlier, but don't remember.
11th record, blow
he's
save.
At 11. If he gets 13, wow. He sets the, I believe, 14. The Yankees record. 14.
Oh, Yankee record, I think, yeah, 13. But so MLB record is 14.
And he'll probably get there.
Oh,
No, because Aaron Boone's not taking him out of the closing position. He's so set on Clay Holmes being the closer, which infuriates me.
I can never go to sleep in the ninth inning watching a Yankee game.
I turned it off because I got so nervous. I'm like, I can't watch them lose this game.
I had to watch the game. I had to. I'm like, all right, I have the podcast tomorrow. I know I'm going to have to talk with Yankees. Let's see what happens this game. All right, 4-3. Gets the first out. All right, I'm happy. Base loaded. All right. I'm not happy. Langford. Grand slam. Great. That's my talking point next tomorrow. That's amazing. And then after watching the game, I had to watch the post-game comments because I know Boone. Boone is a guy that's going to continue defending his players. And it gets to a point where, like, dude, I don't want you defending him anymore.
I respect
need you to be
that
honest.
He defends them. I really do. I love that he backs them up and everything. It's a really good, like,
he's
vibe
a player's
that you got
manager.
Going. Yes. But you have to realize that there is an issue. You have to change things around. You can't put the feelings over, you know, winning the AL East. Like, this is when it really matters now.
It especially when you have Baltimore overtaking you in the division by half a game. Mm-hmm. It might not seem like a lot when you say half a game, but just the way that the season has been going, that can turn it into 1-2, and then I know you're out of the division league. Now you have to worry about the first wild card spot.
Exactly, because winning the AL East can either mean you get the extra week to yourself or you're playing a wild card game the very next few days.
Mm-hmm. I think whoever comes out the AL East is the number one bye in the playoffs, the AL. And you want that, as any team in the AL will want that, but especially for the Yankees perspective. Like,
the Yankees need it probably more than any other AL team, honestly.
I agree, because when it comes to pitching, like, you see how the bullpen usage is always like during the regular season. You can call it like one of the most overused bullpen uses in MLB. So they're going to need the break. And then you never know when it comes down to the last few games who's going to be starting those games. You're going to need those starters for the postseason. You don't want them starting on like 3 days rest to begin with. You know, we'll get into that in the DS or CS, but you have to figure out this closing situation. I think that's going to be a great question to ask here is, should Clay Holmes continue being the closer, or who should be the next closer of the New York Yankees?
Okay, so I have two options. I do not want to see Clay Holmes in the ninth inning ever again. I'd like to see him seventh inning, maybe eighth inning, you know, when there's still time for your offense to get back up to the plate and help him out if he messes up again. I'd like to see Tommy Canley as a closer. You know, he's familiar with the bullpen role. He's effective. His September started off a little rocky, as we were already mentioning. His numbers are not great. He gave up 4 runs in 2 games already. But I want to look at his August. He gave up 2 runs over 12 games, which was 10 and a third innings pitched.
Yeah.
That's pretty incredible.
He was one of our best bullpen
pitchers. Considering Clay Holmes
gave
up a grand slam last night in a third inning pitched. My other option is Luis Gil. He's coming back from injury. Move into the bullpen.
I wasn't expecting that one.
I've read an article about it because I wasn't expecting it either. But my dad texted me last night after the grand slam. He's like, I need Luis Gil in my bullpen. I was like, I don't know about that. But then I was reading up on it, and it kind of convinced me. So I am personally not a fan of the 6-man rotation. I don't think that should be an option for the Yankees. I want to just see the 5-man rotation because
I'm a fan.
I don't know. I understand like the extra rest and everything, but I feel like pitchers like work best in the MLB when they only have like the 5 days, you know?
Okay. No, I agree with that. I just, when looking at the starting rotation, obviously Cole Rendon and Stroman are safe. Like, they're not going to see the bullpen. Like, those are 3 guys right there, right? Now, thinking of your 4-5, when you have 3 guys, Cortez, Schmidt, and Hill, who most likely will look good in the bullpen? I wouldn't trust Clark Schmidt in the bullpen because I saw that last year. Oh, no, not last year. I saw that in 2022. Mm-hmm. That didn't look good, especially in the playoffs. That didn't look good. Hill, I understand in an innings perspective, like, you don't want to, you know, break his arm, especially since he just came back from Tommy John, putting him in the bullpen. But he's also great stuff, crazy command. Like, he will walk the bases loaded and then probably get the 3 outs, though.
Yeah.
Compared to Clay Holmes. And then Cortez, I honestly thought he would look good in the bullpen because he's a guy that can be a lefty specialist. He can get lefties out from the bullpen, especially in a playoff situation. And he's a guy that can get you 2 or 3 innings that you can, I want to say, trust. So when you think about, all right, let's stay 5-man rotation, to me, it would be, right, like Cole, Stroman, Rendon, and then the last two honestly be Hill and Clark because I think they've just been the best pitchers overall this year.
Mm-hmm.
And Cortez might look better in the bullpen. But at the same time, you can switch Hill and Cortez and say Hill might look good in the bullpen, but we've never seen that. It's a lot of questions. That's why I think I like the 6-man rotation because all 6 of them have been respectable starters. They should continue starting and let the conversation kind of come back for the postseason when forget 6-man or even 5-man. Like, you're barely even have a 4-man rotation in the playoffs, and then we can see, like, all right, which two are going to take a hike to the bullpen. But I like Hill as a closer, like,
because
he definitely has stuff. That's why, like, I like that idea.
And like, his innings is like a big issue right now. You know, he already like exceeded his previous like career season high. He's at 124 2/3 inning. You know, he's coming back from injury. I don't want his, like, you need to keep his incredible arm somewhere in this Yankees roster.
Okay.
And then he's just so effective. He keeps his ball at the top of the zone. He's incredibly hard to hit off of, which is just like one of the characteristics you need in a closer. And he's like stable. You know what you're gonna get with Luis Hill. You know, he had that little rough stretch earlier in the season. But if you only need to have him for one inning, maybe an inning and a third, you know what you're going to get with him.
And plus, with him coming back, it's better to ease him into
a
small
role,
playing less innings.
You don't want him to be
too
much.
Well,
then it's jumping him back to playing 7 innings after coming back from rehab. Like, you're just throwing him in there and expecting him to play 7 innings. I don't think that you can.
That's not a good idea.
No, because especially if he gets injured again, you may not see him for the playoffs.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then you got to stick with Clay Holmes. And obviously, he's
not the
answer.
It's a good idea to ease him in, but like, you will also consider him as a closer. Like, easing someone in a closing role when closing is already like high pressure.
But he's good in the high
pressure
situations.
But it's only one inning. At the very most, it's like 2 innings at the very most, and the closing position. But if you expect Yield to play seven innings at the comeback from rehab, you got to set your expectations like really low, because if you set them high and he doesn't show up, then you're going to be disappointed. I feel like it's better to put him in that closing role, ease him in, and then if he proves that he can be a viable starter again, maybe you can bump him back up to starter. But I think for now, he should be the closer.
I would say ease him in the bullpen first, two innings, and then adjust him to a closer role.
But then who's your closer role? Then if you put Yield
in the bullpen? I think closer by committee. I think depending on the situation, you throw in a Kingley or a Weaver or even a Holmes still. Like, I think it really depends on the part of the lineup that's coming up in the ninth inning, how many runs there is in between the teams, and then you decide, like, all right, am I going to throw in Weaver? Am I going to throw in Kingley? Like, not one person is going to get that role, I think. I think you're just going to have to mix match based on matchups. But I'm not going to disagree with a heel closer, though. I think have heel in the bullpen, get him acclimated with it, let him get used to it, and then use him as a closer role. Because we've talked about how good he is six, seven innings throughout the season. If you tell a starting pitcher, oh, I only need you for one inning, oh, I only need you for two innings, an inning and a third, then they don't need to worry about maintaining their stuff for a longer period of time. They can just throw out their best stuff for that couple of outs, or those three outs. He can pass 100 miles per hour for three outs every pitch if he has to. That slider can be more effective, the changeup. Because with a starting pitcher, when you know you have to go six, seven innings, you're going to save your stuff. You know, you're going to kind of like moderate, like not going to throw your best things in the first inning. You know, you're going to kind of wait for the five and six inning, right? So if you tell Heal, I just need you to close, it might be a better situation in my opinion. So I like the idea. I think that's a great way to end the Yankee segment, because, you know, lose Heal for closer. You know, I hope Aaron Boone was like listening to this podcast when it comes out.
I feel like everybody doesn't want Clay Holmes to close, but Aaron Boone. Aaron Boone's the only person
in the baseball world
that wants Clay Holmes to close, and nobody else wants him to.
No fan wants Clay
Holmes
anymore.
Exactly, no fan wants Clay Holmes to close, but
Aaron Boone is not going to do any changes.
Aaron Boone really sees something in him that no one else does, and for that, I like respect it, but you got to
look.
I
don't respect it.
You got to respect that he likes his players and everything. I think, but that's really all you got.
Yeah, because
that's the only thing he has going is that player manager. But
because during the
any sensible person knows to not put Clay Holmes at the
like they recognize closer. The patterns. You gotta change them.
During the post game, I think he said his stuff looks good. He just really got hit today. I'm like, his stuff has not looked good for the past couple of games. We gotta stop with this narrative that his stuff is good. And
he
talks
had zero
about
control last night. Like that was just such a lie. Aaron Boone said, which is an issue with him. Like in his post-game conferences, he doesn't really address the issues right away. And I get not saying it right after the game, like it's still fresh, didn't get to look at the tapes yet, but you gotta understand,
he,
like you lost the
that.
Game.
He did say that. He said, because people ask, is he your closer? He didn't want to throw out those decisions and heal the moment, which understandable, because you can start, you just got walked off. You're gonna like, you know, a lot can be said. So I understand why he didn't want to commit to a closer at that point, but hey, Let's move on. That was a great talk when it came to Yankees and when it came to Mets. Let's talk about AL and NL MVP predictions real quick. You think it's, you know,
I think it's pretty solidified. I think it's Judge and Ohtani.
I know we have a Met fan here, so I know he wants to talk.
I understand the Lindor argument.
He's leading the league in F4 as a shortstop.
Ohtani is about to hit the 50-50 club, the first to ever do it in MLB history. Like, that's kind of, you can't not say he's the MVP if he hits that. I think if he doesn't hit it, then you have an option. And if the Mets make the playoffs, then it's going to get a little more like back and forth. But right now, Judge and Ohtani in the bag.
It's fantastic that he's about in the history 50-50. That's great and all. But I just don't think a DH should win NL MVP because they provide zero value on the defensive end. And Lindor is a gold glover. So
you know, that's exactly what Kurt just said in my ear.
Exactly. See, great minds think alike. I get it. Obviously, the voters are not going to vote against Ohtani because he's Ohtani, one of the greatest players in the world. But I just think that, well, Lindor is obviously going to get snubbed for MVP. I know Ohtani's going to win it, but I think it should be Francisco Lindor.
Now, I'm looking at the numbers. AL, you know, Judge's, the odds for him to win MVP is just crazy.
If like Judge didn't exist, Bobby Witt Jr. would be doing
it. Yes, of course.
And he went on a 3-week streak of hitting like 800, which is insane.
Yeah. Bobby Witt, nothing against
Bobby
him.
Bobby Witt definitely
but
second, but Judge is getting it.
It's tough when you have Judge in your league. And honestly, the top three in MVP voting are two Yankees. Like,
yeah, Soto
even though,
had his.
Even
had
though Soto's struggling right now, so it might not seem like it.
Over Gunner?
100%.
Yeah.
Soto's numbers are better than Gunner, in my opinion.
I think, what was Gunner?
I feel like,
five
I feel like
or four?
Earlier, yeah, I would have put Gunner over Soto, but Gunner has been on a huge slump.
Even so. Nah. Because I feel like, Soto got the average, the RBIs, and even the home run power with Gunner.
Well, now, yeah, but I'm talking like before All-Star break, Gunner was one of the best players in the league.
Yeah, for sure. Like, he was in conversation between, like, him and Bobby Witt, like, who's the best shortstop in AL, until Bobby Witt, like, became, like, legit the best shortstop in the league, let alone AL. So,
yeah, I'd say.
So, yeah, we don't even have to talk about AL MVP. Like, that's clearly Aaron Judge. It's always going to be Shohei or Lindor to finish off the season, in my opinion. Lindor is going to – he had 30 home runs. We talked about that being historic for shortstops. The average is to 273, I believe. The RBIs are there. So, like, let's say Lindor ends off the season. Oh, and the stolen bases. Let's not forget the stolen bases. Even though Ohtani is in 50-50 range, so, like, he's also stealing bases and hitting. Like, when you look at numbers, Ohtani's numbers.
Yeah, he is unfortunately better than every facet.
Better than Lindor.
Stats, but I feel like stats don't tell the whole story. You got to look, you know. Lindor also is one of the best defensive shortstops in the league.
100%.
Yes, of course.
He is either the best defensive shortstop or second best to Bobby Witt. I'll give him that. There's an argument to say that, but I would say Lindor is better.
I agree. But I feel like and Lindor, the crazy thing is he's never made an All-Star game. You know that,
Lindor?
Right? Lindor has never made an All-Star game, and he should have been an All-Star this year. I don't know how.
I was on the podcast that week during All-Star week, and I.
How did C.J. Abrams make it over Francisco Lindor?
I understand, like, the amount of shortstops and everything.
Well,
you can't have too many.
And
but
even Elly De La Cruz. Like, Elly De La Cruz is a great shortstop, but I would not take him over
at the
Francisco
time,
Lindor.
I would say at the time, that was when Lindor was struggling, though, before All-Star break.
Well, he struggled, like, that first, like, May
so I think
time, but
I
then,
think
like, then he bounced back. But
like, we're talking about Lindor in the MVP race because, like, he's been just electric after the All-Star
yes.
break.
But he
know?
Still should have made the All-Star team. Like, come on.
I'm not going to
disagree
with
that. Him and Brandon Nimmo should have been All-Stars, in my opinion.
I'm not going to disagree with that. But at the end of the day, I think for podcasts, you know, Ohtani is the MVP, unfortunately.
I think it should be Lindor, obviously, but I think Ohtani is going to win it.
You know what? I'll even say this. If Ohtani somehow doesn't get 50-50 this year,
which
I'd rather.
He will, though.
Let's just say he doesn't. I'd rather give the MVP to Lindor in that aspect because we've seen players hit 40-40, you know. But again, I agree with him being a DH to Lindor being the field and his war is better than Ohtani. Like, Lindor should probably get the MVP if Ohtani was not to get 50-50. It's just game 50-50 is very historic. Like,
plus, you have to think in terms of, like, valuable. If you take Ohtani off the Dodgers and you take Lindor off the Mets, which team would be?
Oh, yeah,
better?
Mets would be a dump fire in the
exactly.
NLEs.
So. There we go, value. Francisco Lindor has more value to the Mets than Ohtani does to the Dodgers because the Dodgers, obviously on paper, they're probably the best team in baseball, and which means that they have more support. Like, you have Will Smith as your sixth batter. Like, think about that. The
You're
Mets'
right.
sixth batter is Starling Marte. Like, let that – no hate
yeah,
to Starling Marte, but let
that
sink in.
Might want to change that. I'm just saying.
No, I agree.
Starling Marte is your sixth batter. Is not that good. But – moving from MVP talk, let's just overall, you know, we are in postseason hunt. We are in the wild card hunt. And, you know, we talked about it with the Mets. We talked about the Yankees. But just looking at the overall aspect of the game, it looks like going down to the wire, it's going to be the AL East. Who's it going to be? You know, Baltimore, New York. That's always going to be the talk throughout the season. AL Central, you had a moment where you thought Kansas City can overtake Cleveland. And now you look at the division. The Twins overtook the Royals, and Cleveland is still leading the division. And now it's by 4.5 games, 5.5 from the Royals. So to me, I think that division is pretty much done. I think Guardians are going to take that over. The Royals can still make the playoffs, but we're talking about division winners. I think AL Central is done. I think the AL West is done.
Yeah.
I mean, Seattle has been a terrible team throughout the year. I'm surprised they were even in first place.
They went from, like, the second seed to now not even being 500.
Yeah, the Astros are always going to be a
they're a very tough team to beat in the playoffs.
Playoffs, like, regular season, like that's...
Well, the regular season, they had a really tough start.
Oh, yeah. I know, but the Astros are always going to Astro. You
they
know,
are.
Like they're just a good team, and I can't say
plus
nothing.
Anybody can go in the AL West and win that division.
Yeah, because mm-hmm. you had teams like Seattle.
I'm talking like this season, obviously.
You had teams like Seattle who you thought was going to be good, and then Texas just came off a championship, so you thought, like, all right, Houston might take a down year, but that's not the case right now. Like, Houston's going to take that division. So I think we can kind of agree, like, division race-wise, I think the AL East is the only one that's up for grabs in the AL. Who is it going to be? Baltimore, New York. I'm biased right now.
I don't know.
I know my answer. I'll let you answer.
I'm going to say the Orioles, just because the Yankees have proved that they cannot beat below-average teams, and that's who they're playing. Like, you can't... Like, they're not taking advantage of these opportunities that they're given, which is really upsetting. But I think the Orioles, again, similar to the Mets, I think it's only going to be, like, one game, half game. Like, I think it's going to be really close. But I do think the Orioles do get the AL East title.
And Orioles have one of the easiest remaining schedules heading down the stretch.
Yeah.
They're only playing two more teams over 500. One of those is the Yankees.
That's where the Yankees screwed up, because it was the other way around. We had the easier schedule before the Orioles when they had the hard schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And we couldn't take advantage of it. So I think, unbiased-wise, I think the Yankees will win the division. Baltimore will be the number one wild card. I'm going to stick with that prediction. I say that on every one-on-one. I'm going to say it on this podcast.
So you're being biased then?
Nope. Not biased at all. I think the Yankees can still win that division. Going
but
to the...
But the other counterpart in that AL East team is going to make the World Series, though. And it's not the Yankees.
Baltimore needs to show in the playoffs. They got swept last year, so I'm not worried.
Well, they've been better. Don't sleep on Baltimore.
Not,
I had them winning. I had them winning the World Series right now.
I have them going nowhere near the AL.
Yeah, I don't
obviously,
think they're making the World Series.
I don't think they make the.
Obviously,
CS,
you guys
I'm sorry.
Know I want to say the Mets. I will forever think that the Mets will win the World Series every year. I will say that. I'm sure Kurt would say the same thing, but. If I had to choose, like, a non-obvious team, I'd go with the Orioles to win the World Series.
Yeah, once the Orioles can figure out their bullpen, then maybe we can talk about it. But I don't even see them making the CS because that's how bad their bullpen is. Like, we talk how bad the Yankees' bullpen is. I think Baltimore is even worse.
But when you have Gunnar Henderson, Adley Rutschman, and Anthony Santander.
Rutschman has not been himself.
No.
But
he's
I think
really
I think he'll eventually bounce back. I don't like
yes,
the Orioles.
Yes, but there's not as
like
much
anything.
Time left in the season for him to bounce back and really make a difference anymore. Like, you're... Cutting it down to the wire.
I really think you guys are sleeping on the... I know you guys don't like the Orioles, obviously, so I'll cut you some
slack.
They
just don't
perform
well in the playoffs.
And it's not even that. They don't perform well in general. Like, they are in the same slump as the Yankees throughout the season.
Basically the same
duration
that the Yankees have been slumping.
Since June, you know? Like, they've played... if we can throw numbers since the All-Star break, the Yankees have been a better team than the Orioles by a couple games. I know it doesn't show because now they overtook the Yankees in the division, but Baltimore has been in that bad. And... when I look at the offense, it's Gunnar and Santander right now. Rutschman needs to do better. When I look at the Yankees, it's Soto, Judge. Torres has been good. Chisholm has been good. Stanton has been good. Right? I can name more guys in Yankees that have been better than guys I can name on Baltimore.
You got to look at like the bigger picture, like overall. Like, who do you trust more?
I trust the Yankees.
I trust the Yankees more.
I truly do trust the Yankees.
I could disagree, I guess.
I'm not trying to be biased. I just trust the Yankees. I think the Yankees can figure out with their bullpen, who can be in the right spot better than the Baltimore Orioles can figure
that's
out
fair.
Their bullpen. Because offenses, I can go neck and neck. Like, you can say this even. But I think bullpen is where it really goes. Let's go to NL real quick. I think NL East is taken care of. I think Philly.
I think all of the NL is kind of taken care of title-wise. Like, they're all...
Yeah.
Well, there is a flip-flop that will happen in the NL. NL East... specifically,
oh.
But we'll
but
yeah.
we'll get
Mets,
there when it gets
Mets,
there.
Mets overtake the Braves, right?
Yes, they
do. But for title wise, I think it's Phillies, Brewers, Dodgers.
100%. I think Phillies don't lose the lead in the East. The Brewers in the Central has been the worst division in the league, so not worried about that. And there was a moment in time where I'm just saying in 1-on-1, like, you know what? I think the Padres, the Diamondbacks, and give the Dodgers a run for their money. And now I take that back, and the Dodgers will win that division. But
I think the Padres are a sneaky team to make some noise in October.
And you know Ooh. What? Let's move on to that. Let's talk about the wild card because the Padres are the number one team in the NL wild card. So I don't see them moving away from that. But they are only half a game above the Diamondbacks for number one spot. And that means something. That's home court. I'm home field. I'm thinking basketball. So between those two West teams, I think the Padres are a better team. I think they really improved past the trade deadline. They just got Tatis back from injury. I think they keep the number one wild card. I think the Diamondbacks also keep the second wild card. And then
game of Jackson Merrill, the NL Rookie of the Year.
You know what? I think I don't hear that a lot about Rookie of the Year, and I think I agree. Like, a lot of people think Skeens is
Rookie of the Year. It will go to Skeens because of the whole, like,
I don't think so anymore. I think
here's the thing with, like, awards. You have to think the way the voters will think.
That's true. Why do you think Wells won Rookie of the Year? The voters are not going to choose him.
I agree. But I think Wells should be the AL Rookie of the Year. I agree with you guys. But in terms of the NL, I know I'm agreeing with Yankees fans. It's
finally.
That's the first time they'll ever
have. We were able to turn. That was the point of the podcast today, to have two Yankee fans to help a Met fan turn.
And we succeeded.
But I still think the Mets
Austin
will.
Wells but the Mets are winning all everyone. This year.
All right. Now we lost him. All right, he went back. But
okay.
It's okay because the Mets and Braves, that's the wild card spot that we're really thinking of right now in the postseason race. The Cubs and Cardinals were trying to catch up. I don't think they're going to. Yeah, four games is a lot at this point of the year. So it comes down to who's going to play better baseball, the Braves or the Mets. Who do you think?
Braves.
I know we talked about this
we
in the Mets segment,
this,
but like...
It's my opinion hasn't changed.
Say what you want about the Braves. I still think the Mets are making the playoffs. I don't care what you guys say at all.
I think just the Braves have the better team at this point. Like, I know you were saying how great the Mets were, but they're just – it's hard to compare the Mets and the Braves when the Mets are striking out as much as they are.
That's a good point. So right now we're looking at a Dodgers, Phillies, Brewers, Padres, Diamondbacks, and Braves National League postseason.
That'll change, but that's it for now.
It could be the Mets, but I would say those teams, Dodgers, Phillies, Brewers, Padres, and Diamondbacks are the guarantees. Like those five teams. And it's between who's going to be that 16, Braves or Mets.
I think if the Diamondbacks can get Ketel Marte back, I think might flip-flop. Mm-hmm.
That's another piece that they could use just to be the number one wild card. And at this point, if you're the number one wild card, that will go somewhere. And, I mean, we look at the AL wild card, like, I think it's – kind of taken care of. I know there's a lot of Boston fans on campus, so I hope they don't hear this part of the podcast, but
they're out.
I don't think the Red Sox are making any noise. I know the Royals have struggled
3-7. The Royals had a really tough schedule to end out the season, though. Like, I was thinking that they were going to slip a little bit. Like, I figured they would get into the third spot, but
I didn't realize the Royals have lost 7 straight.
Yeah. That was my team that was going to make a lot of noise in October, though.
I thought
the
they
Royals.
Were going to overtake
but
the Central.
The Red
point.
Sox are staying out. The Royals are taking that third wild card spot. And then I think really the only flip-flop in the AL is Baltimore and New York.
Yeah, who's going to be the bye? Who's going to be the number one wild card? I think the six teams is definitely going to be Orioles, Guardians, Astros, Yankees, Twins, and Royals.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm sorry for the Red Sox fans on campus. They're not going to.
They don't have a shot.
Oh, I'm not either. I just have to, you know,
be a little considerate.
Be a little considerate. Exactly. But
Yankees fans being considerate.
I'm trying here.
We're learning.
So let's end off on a positive note, though. We kind of named all the six teams on both sides that we'd see in the playoffs. And I think a great question to end off this wonderful podcast is, not only is there a clear favorite to win it all, but like, who do you think will win all, even if they're not a clear favorite?
So I don't actually think that there is a clear favorite. You know, we mentioned it a little bit earlier in this episode, but there's just so much parity in the league right now. But if I had to choose who's going to be in the World Series and who's going to win, I think Dodgers-Yankees World Series and the Dodgers win. I think...
Oh, that just hurt.
I know it hurt. I'm upset that I also predicted that, but seeing how the Dodgers and the Yankees played against each other earlier this season, like,
yeah,
it
was
really... a tough watch as a Yankees fan. And I think, like, you know, neither team has changed that much. Obviously, it's hard to compare with how much space there's been between these two series, but I think the Dodgers go home with the win.
You really think the Yankees are making the World Series?
I do think the Yankees are making this World
That's
Series.
That's probably the funniest thing I've heard all day.
I think this is the year they beat the Astros in
the
postseason.
You guys are like
the
Cowboys. It's our year every year.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yankees are
the
Cowboys of
baseball. I'm literally
wearing
a Giants shirt.
Wait a minute.
The Yankees are the Cowboys of baseball.
That's a crazy statement.
Every year, the Yankees say it's our year.
Because the Yankees change.
And Kurt behind the booth knows I'm telling the truth.
Every year, the Mets are like, oh, it's our year. 2024, we're going to
Yankees fans do the same thing. Bradley, you can't deny it.
Bradley, give me your take. So
yeah, who's winning?
I know I said the Orioles were going to win the World Series, but I forgot the Dodgers exist. I think it's going to be Dodgers-Orioles, and obviously I think the Dodgers are going to win. They're much better than the Orioles. I don't think the Yankees are making the World Series. That's just a crazy take.
My take, Yankees make it out the AL. Dodgers don't make it out the NL, though. Oh. I think... And it might
sound
strange.
You think Dodgers make the NLCS or DS?
I think the Dodgers don't make the CS. I think it's Yankees-Philly in the World Series with the Yankees being them in six.
You have the Yankees winning?
A little recreate of 09. I really do. I have faith, especially after the sweep that we had in Philly.
That's a good point.
That was the beginning of the Chisholm era. So, like, I have faith. I think Philly versus Yankees in a World Series. I think that's going to... That's what's gonna happen. This has been
great, a fun episode.
Great conversation. I mean, I know it went long, but like that's what happens when you talk baseball. Just a lot just comes out. I want to thank our producer behind the scenes, Kurt Sipple, on a great production role. Bradley, Lauren, I'm Andrew DeCret. This was a great episode. Nosebleeds. You can watch us on Spotify and Apple Music. Thank you very much.